You're listening to UK Health Radio, where health means more than the absence of illness. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. I'm Hillary Burns, and each week we explore honest conversations about life, health, and whole person well-being through real stories of resilience, healing, and human connection. This is the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Today we have Heather Schapter, who is the Executive Director of Crossroads International. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here. Great to be with you.
We will talk about Crossroads. We also want to talk about you and how you got there. So I'm going to let you start us off with what you think would give us an understanding of why are you working there? Why does that call to you?
Thank you. I think from a really young age, I just had this thing that I'd like to end poverty, and, you know, not really for any good reason. It's not like I had to be the one to be involved, but it just really called to me. And there is an aspect of diverse culture. So it was a particular, I'm really interested in and see it completely possible to not have poverty on the planet, and in particular, where poverty is the most dire. So not necessarily looking in North America or Europe, and I don't mean to say there aren't challenges as well, but really looking to see where there's the greatest poverty on the planet, which also happens to be where there's incredible diversity. So I was really interested in the diversity of cultures and perspectives.
Now, when you say at a young age, what age are you talking about?
But I started my first non-government, like my first charity, you know, like that. So just, so at least from when I was 17.
Wait. When you were 17, you started your own charity?
Yes. Yeah. I started my own charity. So at least from that time, and that was a charity that was founded in volunteerism. Just a simple idea. There were teens, and of course I was a teen too, but there were teens that were, you know, kind of getting into trouble, you know, in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It was in the summer, you know, when they didn't have school, and they had incredible dancing talents. They really liked to dance, you know, music, dance, like that. And so, you know, there were a lot of senior citizens' homes where I was living. And so we thought, and, you know, they didn't have a lot of people visiting them. So we organized the teens to do dance routines and come and visit the seniors. And then that turned into, you know, crafts. And anyway, they all fell in love with each other. And 10 years later, that thing was still going. I can remember I got a call in a completely different part of the world saying, we're having a reunion of, it was called Helping Hands Volunteens. Would you like to join us? And they had no idea that I founded it.
Okay, when I was a teenager, I was out, you know, driving around looking
for teens.
I was a good girl, okay. And I got good grades and I did all my homework, but we still were driving around looking for guys. I wasn't thinking about starting a charity. Like how did that happen to come across your mind? Like, you know, or it just did.
You know, I think, you know, I grew up in Newfoundland. So it's the most easterly province in Canada. And, you know, the culture is really, people really take care of each other. It's just a really taking care of. And, you know, my mom was a huge volunteer. She was the provincial commissioner for Girl Guides of Canada. And I think it was just really inculcated in the family and in the culture to be of service. So really, it was just kind of the water, literally,
yeah,
you know, like
wow.
swimming in. So, and like, it was totally joyous. It was like, it wasn't like a hardship. It was like, I love this. I love making a difference and like that.
And were you one of the dancers too?
Yes. Madonna, I think it was. Papa, don't preach.
Was it really?
Oh, was one of the songs. Yeah.
Oh, how fun. No, that
Yeah.
makes sense. No, but because I didn't grow up with you know, I wouldn't have thought of it because you know, again, my family wasn't doing that.
Sure.
So, wow.
Yeah, and I can remember when I was, this goes way back, right? So, when I was in kindergarten, so at that time, the Vietnamese refugees, so this is during the Vietnam War, they were, you know, some refugees were coming to Canada, perhaps other places, but, and there was a Vietnamese refugee in our class. And Mrs. Stead, our kindergarten teacher, you know, when it was time to, you know, go to the washroom, she said, "Heather, can you take, you know, the Vietnamese refugee? Could you take her to the washroom?" It's what you did, right? You went in twos always. And I said, "Of course." And so I can still remember she opened the stall door, and instead of, you know, sitting down, she jumped and she squat. Right. And I said, "Where are you from? That is awesome." Right. That she's different, right? As in she's from a different place. So that's kind of the fascination from a young age with the diversity piece.
Oh, that was kindergarten. Wow.
Yeah.
So that's so interesting, right? That it started so young,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know? Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. So you started a charity at 17, like most 17-year-olds, just kidding.
That's
No,
a
that's
cool
amazing.
thing, though, to
What?
create.
What'd you say?
That's a cool thing to create. Like
Yes.
most
Wow.
17-year-olds, yeah.
Well, Newfoundland, you said you take care of each other. Do you think that's all over Canada? Because I don't necessarily, I mean, I guess there would be pockets of it here. I'm in Connecticut, USA.
Sure,
You know,
yeah.
churches do. So
Yeah.
I wouldn't say nobody does, but do you
Yeah.
think that's all over Canada or just particular to there?
Yeah, I mean, I think similarly there'd be pockets, you know, in every province, you know, for sure. And I think at least Canadians would say that the Newfoundland culture in particular, you know, does stand out. And, you know, it might be from a history of a lot of hardship with the fishery. And, you know, there might be like you have to pull together because it's difficult. It can be difficult, or it used to be, you know, in the past. So it does have a reputation of that kind of generosity. Like even my mother-in-law, you know, who's a Newfoundlander, you know, she will say to me, you know, she'll kind of lean in, you know, when we're in a conversation, and she'll say, you know, there's a single mom down the street, Heather, and she will never want for anything. You know, that kind of a quiet, no one makes a big deal out of it. It's just what people do.
Wow. That's so cool. I was just in my office, we were talking about how when COVID started, how some people, you know, bought all the toilet paper and they were just being so selfish, you know, as opposed to 9/11, which brought people together and so wonderful, you know. So it's interesting that, you know, the different cultures, I guess. And I know we're going to talk about culture today. So, okay. And now I think we could take our commercial break. And then when we come back, we'll get the rest of the story. All right.
The station that makes you feel good. What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
All right.
So then it took you 6 months and you got a not-for-profit job.
Yeah, exactly. So from then on, I, you know, worked with, you know, some of the kind of the best and the biggest, you know, in the field of ending poverty with, again, a focus on women and girls. Mm. Yeah. And then, so I did that for many years. And then including I got to work and live in Bangladesh and work with the largest non-governmental organization on the planet. They were then 25 years ago, and they still are. They're called BRAC, B-R-A-C. Yeah, and I can just share a short story about that. The founder, who's passed now, his vision, end of poverty through the empowerment of women. Now that's 30 years ago in Bangladesh. So, you know, Bangladesh then and was, right? It's a heavily hierarchical and, you know, male dominated. And that was his stand. So one of the examples was BRAC wanted to put in place what's called sericulture and aquaculture programs. So the sericulture is the making of silk from the worms, because they also had a huge clothing business. So the saris, right, all of the beautiful clothing. And then aquaculture, fish farming. So he started out these enormous programs. And just to give you an idea, a single program would reach 2 million women.
Was he from there or was he from here?
He was Bangladeshi, yeah.
Okay, and he knew, that's so amazing, right? That he saw that women were the...
They were the present and the future. And just to say that he's starting these two technical large scale programs, but he only wanted to have women work there. Well, how could you do that? So, because they didn't have any education in those two areas. So you know what he did? He created a Harvard model university so that women could be trained in sericulture and aquaculture as an example of the kind of work that they do. So I got to work with that incredible man and that incredible organization.
And what was your role there? Was the university already up, or were you creating it, or what?
I wasn't involved in the university. So what I was doing was decentralizing, kind of putting more in the hands of the women, new businesses that they could start up.
Wow.
So there were still, like, the starting of new businesses was still mostly top down in the organization, just kind of endemic of the culture. So with my partners there at BRAC, I said, well, what about, could we engage the women more directly in what businesses they think they could start? And most of the women were illiterate. But we found a way with them. And I have to tell you, Hillary, when I would meet with the women and with my colleagues, right, at BRAC, they were just so gobsmacked that someone asked them what they thought, you know, like that. And so then we kind of trained them, like, on five fingers, you know, how do you know if a business has a good shot, right? So we would train them on, you know, uses local materials. Oh, okay. It looks like we can actually bring in more money than spend, you know, like that kind of thing. And BRAC went from starting about 10 businesses, small businesses every year to 10 every single month because of the women, you know, so just they're really empowered. So that was the work I got to do. We started with 10,000 women. It was spread to the 2 million women that were being served by the organization.
Wow. And how long were you there?
A little over 2 years.
That's incredible. 10 a year, 10 a month. Wow.
just in case there's any Bangladeshi fabulous people listening, Ami Ektu Bagla Bolti Pari. Which is, I can speak a little Bengali.
Wow, that's incredible. 10 a year to 10 a month. How long did that take? Was that in the 2 years or was that?
Yeah, that was in the 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the businesses were successful and they thrived.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And not all of them, of course, but they had a far greater startup and then success rate because BRAC's amazing. So yeah, that was Bangladesh and Haiti and different. I lived in Haiti as well. And so different places. And then I worked in the tech sector. So just to say kind of the next phase for me was I saw really great programs around the world. BRAC is one of the many examples, but very few programs or initiatives are scaled, like really scaled. And I thought maybe one of the leverage points could be technology. So I worked with a global tech firm and I headed up their non-governmental division to see how could we scale some of the best programs around economic empowerment for women in the Middle East and North Africa. And then I would say had kind of medium success. There was some failure around having investors fund kind of that initial phase where you need to do the investment, you know, in the technology to get it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What kind of technology? Like, so you were still helping them start businesses or is this a different thing?
So this would be helping organizations that had really good training programs on how to start your business, how to be successful in your business, again, for, women in, you know, really low income areas, and then how to have technology, because a lot of that would be still in person, Hillary, right? So there's a real limit then to the numbers. So how could technology support that? Okay. So that was way before COVID, right? So it was new even to look at, could people use a tablet? You know, how could we connect through the internet? Even most of these women would not have access to the internet.
So you were trying to scale training them to start businesses, the scaling of the training.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, and then I had my own leadership company looking to see how could I empower the leaders in organizations that were ending poverty so they could be more effective. So I did that for a decade as well.
Whoa.
Yeah.
While you were doing the other stuff or is this the next thing for 10 years?
That was the next thing. Yeah. And then from that, then I had the idea, what would it be like? Maybe I could lead my own, like that doesn't have to be my organization, but maybe I could lead a whole organization, maybe like that. And then I started to speak that and share that. And then that.
And is Crossroads the first one that you've been leading?
It is. Yeah,
wow.
Exactly. So I've only ever led like departments or, a division. I've never led a whole organization. So it's the first time.
And how do you like it?
I love it. It's a complete joy, you know, and there's things I notice that aren't my strengths, I would say, you know, like I would say on the admin side, it's not something I wake up and like, I can't wait to fill out a form, you know, that kind of thing. And there's some forms to fill out or things to approve. And it's magnificent. And I can't wait every single day to be with my team and, grow and expand and, you know, and make the difference we get to make.
Wow. That's so cool. Okay. Woo, it's amazing the progression, right? From jumping on the toilet seat to starting a charity, right? All that, and here you are. Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's talk about Crossroads, right? I think it's time. What I know when we talk, there's a lot you guys are doing and the countries, you know, what do you want to, where do you want to start with that?
Sure. So maybe the vision, right? So everything we do is for, you know, this vision. So it's one world. So we have a vision of like one world, and it's a world that is without poverty. So that's not present. And then it's a world where the rights of women and girls are fulfilled. So that's kind of always the beacon for everything we do. The organization has been around 65 years, and I can perhaps say in a minute about the kind of how it got started. And we are in 11 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. So that's where we operate. And we operate with and through partners in Africa. So our approach is local partners. They are the best place to say, what are the community priorities and what does the community need to fulfill on those priorities?
Now, they're not employees of you, right? You just...
That's right. They have their own employee structures. Exactly. Yeah. So we partner with them. They'll say, here are our priorities. Here's what we need, Crossroads, in terms of, you know, them being more effective. And then we get them primarily, you know, skilled volunteers to fulfill on that.
Okay. So skilled volunteers. And do you also give them funding or no?
And we give some funding. It's a smaller part of what we do, which I happen to like because, you know, sometimes there can be a dependency that gets created for any of us, right, who are receiving money from other sources. So there is some seed funding, but it's primarily around, we call it capacity strengthening. Some people think of it as training, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, whereas someone comes and is alongside an existing staff or, you know, group of people so that when they leave, that capacity is strengthened and it's left, right? It's intact. Yeah.
So we will be right back after a message from our sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And welcome back, Heather Schachter.
Thank you.
Yay. All right. Do you want to start with, I know you were saying you had a story about how Crossroads was started.
Yeah.
Do you want to start there?
Let me share that because it speaks to the values of the organization. So in 1958, there was a gentleman by the name of Reverend Dr. James Robinson based in the United States. And Reverend Dr. James Robinson thought that if he could possibly send American volunteers to Africa during the civil rights movement, those Americans certainly might provide something of value to the Africans, but he was really more interested in the new perspectives and even new views of the world that they would return with that could really provide a new future for the civil rights movement.
You know, I was thinking when you first told me that, that it was like in the 40s or 50s, but the civil rights were the 60s.
Right, yeah.
Right?
And the, exactly, yeah. And
it seems like, so how many years? That's 60 years
so
ago.
65. Oh my
God. So that's scary.
And so that, right. That's the piece about the American kind of start. And then what I really love about it is it's that equality piece, right? It doesn't mean that we're better than, right? It's just that it's just the diversity of perspective that provides something else, a new view. And then there's a small group.
Yeah. And so how, I mean, I'm wondering how did his brain come up with that, but how, if he's, if they saw these other places where there wasn't equality, they would bring that back here and go, whoa, is that, am I missing it?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly, but what I think, yeah. And certainly what our volunteers, you know, tell us over and over again today, it's just like, you know, when you go and you see that, wow, they kind of, you know, they don't eat meatloaf on Tuesday. You know, it's like they just do things really differently. So it's just that opening up of, wow, there's like, there's different people in the world. I mean, we're all, you know, okay. So similar in ways, but so it's a different perspective that as simple as that. Like,
yeah. Okay. So it's like, we do it this way. Oh my God, there's another way to do it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Or, you know, just seeing, wow, like these people who look so different, look how much love they have in their family or, you know, like that. So I really love the diverse, again, it's the diversity, right? And diversity of cultures. Yeah. No one is better than, it's not like that. It's just, there's a diversity of perspective. So that was the US, this is Canada. So there was a small group of individuals close to the border, US-Canada border, and they were so inspired by what they were having these volunteers share that they collected, and this is 65 years ago, $5,000, and they offered it to Reverend Dr. James Robinson for his initiatives. And he said, thank you, but really how you could best support me is to please start your own crossroads in Canada. So that's how that was started 65 years ago in a place called London, Ontario. And less than a month ago, we returned to that place for the first ever 65 years of volunteering impact, a celebration of volunteers and the volunteering movement. And the founder of Crossroads spoke, and so many of those part of that original setting up, raising funds, really speaking to the value and the impact volunteers could have, that we all got together with new volunteers as well, just to celebrate each other and for them to be acknowledged for what they started.
Wow. So was the Canadian founder, yeah, or the original?
It was the Canadian founder, Reverend Dr. James Robinson. He's passed away some time ago.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. So tell us like what kind of stuff are you guys doing? Like, I know we covered some of it. What would be some of your best successes? I know you said you had some good stories.
Sure. And maybe I can speak to what's in the video as well. So yeah, the video is looking at some of our girls' empowerment programs. So those are places that are, they're kind of like extracurricular clubs that are in schools. And of course, many girls are not in school. So we also have programs that provide access to those girls. But it's a safe space where girls can come together and learn actually about the rights of their bodies, And what we have seen is the incidence of then child marriage is going down in many of these countries. Mm. And as well in the video, there are some pictures of some tablets. So we are using technology. I talked earlier about the opportunities to have technology scale some great programs. So we have these mobile learning labs. So girls are learning on their tablets about the rights of their bodies, the importance of education. And so 33% now, there's a 33% reduction of girls dropping out of school because they're learning about these rights. They now know they have a right not to be married at 12. Things like that. And the other thing, Hillary, just kind of, it links all of, to all of this, is what we call menstrual poverty. So it's a really key piece so that girls get educated on when they menstruate, they can find, they're now in many places, they can find access to reusable sanitary pads, reusable. Because many families can't afford to use them or buy them. Girls miss out a week every month out of school, and then they drop out, right? Because they're too far behind, like that, right? So menstrual poverty. So those are key areas. Ending child marriage, you know, really educating girls and then providing access to their families to the reusable sanitary pads, and then really supporting them to the staying in school, right, is the key to breaking the cycle in their families.
Now, okay. This is a question I had after our conversation yesterday. So they have a certain culture of this, let's say child marriage, and I know we discussed the genital mutilation, right? But that's part of their culture. I mean, one could say, hey, who are you to change that? You know, how it did, or is it the partners that are bringing you in that are asking that? You know what I'm saying? Like, if something's so ingrained, how did they welcome you to change it? That's what I was wondering. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's it.
And who knew that this was wrong? You know what I mean? Like, who knew? Who was aware to bring you in?
Sorry. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, you said it. It's the partners, right? So all the partners that we're working with, it's their goal also to have equality for women and girls. So they are the ones who, you know, we select them, right? But then they come to us and say, these are the biggest barriers to having girls stay in school. Their parents can't afford sanitary pads, like that. Mm-hmm. And so we're the, you know, kind of background support. We're not the ones going to the, you know, religious leaders. We're not the ones going to the politicians, to the government. It's the partners.
And are they females or males or both?
They're both. Yeah, they're both. And primarily female headed, but men as well. So there is a movement. Absolutely. I mean, many men also really see that these practices do not empower women. There isn't anything from them about it. It's just where there's still resistance. I mean, the example of the, you know, the menstruation, for example, right? So Crossroads, we work in Senegal, so in West Africa, and I was there recently, and our Senegalese team, many of whom are men, I have never talked so much about menstruation in my whole life. They're like, okay, So here are the issues with girls and menstruation, and here's what we're doing, and here are the sanitary pads, and here's the reusable part, and here's how we're getting the supplies. So there, right, there's, I mean, I came home to my sons and my husband saying, I think we need to talk about menstruation, right? So there are really some, you know, extraordinary voices of men that are, you know, leading the way, which is really great, because it sometimes takes that, given there's still such a lack of equality for women voices.
Yeah. And how, like, you know, when you're just like in your little fishbowl, right, you don't know that there's anything else, right? Like when the Reverend took people there, they saw, oh, they do it differently. Like someone had to have opened their eyes that there's another way, you know, and then now they're behind it and they're bringing, I mean, it's really incredible, right?
It's incredible. There's a young woman leader in Tanzania, and she's a lawyer, and she came and spoke at our International Day of the Girl. So the United Nations has an International Day of the Girl, and Crossroads has a flagship awareness and fundraising event. It's in person in Toronto. And so we sometimes have these special speakers. So Rebecca Jumi, so she came in 2019 before COVID. So I had met her 2 months before in Tanzania. And she told us that she had been to court, her organization, and she was fighting for marriage, the age of marriage for girls to be the same as the age of marriage for boys at 18. So it was not. Okay, it was not. So when we met her in August, she was just finishing up at the Court of Appeal. So it had already been through once, and now she was at the Court of Appeal. And she was telling us, here are the, you know, the four arguments that the Tanzanian government has against child marriage for girls being the same age. And, you know, I said to her, so what are you going to do if you lose? And she looked at me kind of like, you know, what kind of silly question is, you know, that's how I heard.
Right,
like, and she goes, well, we'll just keep going, you know, like that. So to give me an idea of kind of the leadership, right, that we have. So by the time when she came and she spoke for International Day of the Girl, she told us that the Court of Appeal had overturned 100% of the Tanzanian government's arguments. And now today, the Tanzanian child marriage age is the same for girls as it is for
boys. Wow. Wow. Now, what were their reasons not to do it? Do you remember?
I don't remember. When I heard them, they were valid, you know, taking care of, right? Wanting to make sure the girls are taken care of, like that.
Oh, okay.
So again, not a, like, being in their shoes, could completely get it. And there's a stand for something else, for the equality piece. So that's what's possible.
Wow. And so they were married. I mean, just to understand why, like, people would get married, you know, at 10 or 12. I know we were talking a little yesterday, but they would be living in a household and be taken care of, right? That's because their families couldn't?
That's kind of the window dressing, right? So
okay. So
families that economically couldn't take care of so many children, less likely that the girls could have gainful employment, perhaps as much as the boys. Again, I'm talking in really, you know, traditional sociocultural situations. So please, let's have the girls be taken care of and then be married off. Now, of course, we know the horror that, you know, often ensues with very young girls being married off into, you know, terribly abusive situation. Sure. So that's what the partners and Crossroads, you know, were out to transform, and it's happening.
Good. Wow.
Yeah. So these empowerment clubs are really,
Did the families get money for it?
With the dowry, often. So that's sometimes part of the practice. Yeah.
Okay. So with the empowerment, these girls are seeing, oh, I don't have to do that. And where do those tablets come from? Is that from your organization?
It is. Yes. So that's, you asked about sometimes, is there funding involved? So So that's through, again, the generous donation of some individual donors and some foundations that we were able to provide those, which is really great.
Wow.
And what I will say is, when I was there, the municipality now, you know, in some of these areas, they're putting in money from their own budgets. And that's really the key to sustainability, right? Is the local governments are seeing the initiatives are really transformative, that they're putting in their own budget. That's what we want to see.
Right. And who developed the training? Did you guys do that, or did they do it locally?
A combination of. Yeah. So we have some experts in house. I mentioned, of course, you know, skilled volunteers. So this would be one of the key ways where skilled volunteers would lend their expertise, work with the local partners. And I think that's one of the great examples of that whole diversity piece, right? Of course, local partners know, how do you communicate that? What are the key priorities and what are the key needs? But there's some really great knowledge, tools, and insights, you know, from outside of the local areas that we want to bring in from the World Health Organization and from other sources. So to bring all that together, I think that's really where you get the magic and the possibility that it will stick.
So let's say I say, oh, I want to volunteer. Then what does it look like so that people know what they're signing up for?
Yeah, so it looks kind of like a structured job. Like, you've got a mandate, you'd have a job description, all of your costs would be covered, you would get, you know, an orientation, then you would be going to one of the 11 countries in Africa, and you'd be there from, the shortest mandate is 2 weeks in terms of effectiveness. And there'd usually be quite a bit of communication with the partner up front. 2 weeks, mm-hmm. 6 months, and then the longest is a year.
Wow. Yeah. Now, if I, let's say I have a job, I mean, this is not paid. You're not getting a salary, but you are getting your expenses.
You're not out of pocket, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So how do people, they just take a leave of absence from their job, or maybe they're in between jobs?
Exactly. Yeah. So the average age of volunteer with Crossroads is 34. So that's the situation now. We do have some volunteers who do remote volunteer assignments. So you're just saying, well, I have a job, so how could I? So we do have that. And some of our sister organizations, so there's others like us in Canada, they do that a little bit more than we do. So far, we have found the best way to engage remote volunteers is when they've already gone to the partner. And then, you know, the relationship is really lovely. And then the remote piece, the remote assistance, support, collaboration is more effective. We would love to explore that more, especially for skilled volunteers with different abilities, including, you know, disabilities. They could engage and would like to engage more. So if that's of interest to anyone, they could also be in touch with us.
Okay. And how, so we got like about a minute left. Sure. I want to make sure people know how to reach you and what you want to lead, like what your vision is for the world, for your organization. Let's say 5 years from now, what would be like the best thing ever that you could imagine?
Mm, thanks for the question. So maybe I'll just give my email. So, if there's a way to put that on the screen after, but Heather, first name, at C-I-N like November, T like Tango, L like Lima, .org, C-I-N-T-O-R-E. So that's the best way to reach me. And I think, I mean, what I'd like to leave people with is to be engaged, you know, in one of three ways: volunteer with Crossroads or in your local community, advocate for rights, for equality, for whatever you see might be missing, And then to donate either financially or some of your other gifts. So volunteer, advocate, and donate. A world with people engaged in one or all of those three ways, I think would be a really great one world.
I love that. One world. Imagine it would only be peace.
Right.
There'd be no reason to have anything other than peace. And I would even put in love.
Right.
Right. Wow. Well, thank you, Heather. Anything real quick in closing or?
Thanks for the opportunity. And thanks to all the women and girls and boys and men that we serve for their courage and boldness. We're here for them.
Wow. Well, thank you, Heather, for who you are, for what you're doing for the world. It's just incredible. And thank you for your courage and just your stand for women and for the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show on UK Health Radio. If today's conversation resonated with you, take a moment to reflect, share, or simply be with what you heard. Until next time, this is Hillary Burns, inviting you to stay curious, stay connected, and keep getting real.